When is a good idea not really a good idea? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to this edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, my Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, and good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be here today. I'm kind of cranked up from doing these little analyses. I didn't think I had my energy level was this high, but I seem to be ready to go.
Well, there is something about getting your blood pressure up when you hear about some of the things that some of our elected officials and others around the frigid plain of this country are doing. Chuck, I guess the thing is that some of this stuff gets reported, but the vast majority of people don't hear about it or don't pay attention to it, or they look at it and say, oh, well, okay, that's just them being them, and that we know that the president's going to go out and make a bunch of speeches, and he's going to say stuff he doesn't mean. And the big problem is he's saying things that he actually does mean. I think many people made that same mistake in 2008 when he was on the stump as a candidate, and he was telling people exactly what he was going to do when he got into office, and they looked at him and said, oh, he can't mean that. Oh, nobody can get away with doing that. He doesn't. That's just stuff to rouse up his base. Surprise.
Yes. Let's talk about something just as a sidebar real quick before we go back into this. And that is, again, we've talked about Operation Chaos. Let's get things straight about Operation Chaos. There were Republicans out there saying crossover, and
Let's go back and explain exactly where Operation Chaos came from, and then we'll explain what it does. Operation Chaos was the brainchild of a number of Republican operatives, including one who's very familiar probably to most listeners, Rush Limbaugh, who they decided that Hillary Clinton would be such anathema as president that it was an anybody but Hillary move. And Chuck, what did they do to try to stop Hillary from getting the nomination?
Despite what they're claiming now, what they did was they said, go out and vote for Barack Obama in the primaries.
Yeah, register in the other party and vote against Hillary Clinton.
But the relevant part of today's discussion is why they said vote for Barack Obama. Because virtually everybody on the conservative side of the aisle acknowledged that the guy was a Marxist. But what they said was, because he is such an open Marxist, there is no possibility that he could win.
Oops. I think they miscalculated that one, too.
How does that figure in today? He is doing the same thing he did in 2007 and 2008. And that is, he is saying exactly what his agenda is. In fact, what he is doing is he realizes that he has ticked off a lot of the base, and he is running back to the left, and knowing full well, Barry, that the news media will bury these kinds of stories on page D32 of the newspaper. Now, of course, not that many people read a newspaper anymore, but how many times do people pop on an online paper and do anything but read the front page? Or maybe click on a story that looks interesting. Do they delve into the opinion page? Do they delve into the deeper sections of the paper? I'm not being critical because I understand most people don't have time. They're too busy working to pay their taxes to be able to get
indeed. And thankfully, you and I live in the lap of free, and so we can do things like this radio program and not have to worry about paying.
We have to pay for it. I forgot.
We're in the same boat, but we're middle class. But the point is that I understand something that if I don't have to pay something out, i.e. a tax, I have money that I can use. I can use it for other things. But I think maybe Obama's taking this idea and taking a couple steps too far, because he's saying, and we talked about this yesterday as well, he's talking about what he calls spending in the tax code, unquote. Basically, he's saying that if you raise taxes, you cut spending. In other words, that the $1 trillion that he's saying that we're scheduled to spend on this tax cut is not actual government expenditure, but an estimate of what the government would have raised in revenue had the tax cuts not been in place. In other words, he's saying, we projected we could have raised this, and so therefore we're going to go ahead and spend it, so therefore we've got to find the money somewhere else.
Okay, Barry, this is exactly the same kind of math we're doing on the unemployment rate right now.
That's exactly right.
Because we projected this many of jobs would be lost in December and January, and we only lost half that amount. Therefore, we must have created the difference. So automatically, these job creation claims are printed out. I was on YouTube the other day and saw a Barack Obama thing, this giant chart where it showed X number of jobs lost by George W. Bush administration, and then X number, all these jobs that had been created by Barack Obama, the number was actually higher than had existed originally in the Bush administration. Who would buy this? Seriously. Well, but then again, they're hoping
enough voters to keep him in office for another 4 years.
Of course, the faithful will buy anything. If he told them the sky was green, they'd say, well, you know, the blue, green is the new blue. And that wouldn't be a problem. But I don't think that Joe Average is going to look at the current state of the economy and say, yeah, all these people are back. We all know too many people who haven't had a job in a year and are still looking, or have had to take a job in a gas station or a couple of gas stations to make enough money to stay in their house. So nobody's buying this, except that, again, the party faithful. Now, again, I'm not being critical because, let's face it, there are Republicans who really thought that George W. Bush was pro-life through his entire two terms and really was a conservative. Gee, that just, in retrospect, by looking at the record, the facts do not bear up.
Well, but the point is that you can sell anything if you pick a foil. I used to work in the nonprofit world a lot, and I'm going to give people a little insight into the nonprofit world. The key thing is, when you're raising money in nonprofit world, everybody gets the letters from your favorite charities or from the ones who got you on a mailing list somewhere because your name got sold by one of your favorite charities. And you get this letter, and it's this long, drawn-out letter telling you about how horrible everything is and how dangerous this action or this activity is going on. And so, therefore, just send money to us, and we'll take care of it for you. That's called show them a devil. And that's what Barack Obama is doing with this. He's showing us a devil. And his devil happens to be a close personal friend of his, Warren Buffett. Because he points to Warren Buffett and says, you heard me say it, Warren Buffett pays a lower tax rate than his secretary. Now, what's he actually saying here? Chuck, this is more newspeak, because you notice he uses the term tax rate.
Rate, right.
Because what he doesn't want to say is, yeah, okay, Warren Buffett pays much more interest dollar for dollar than his secretary does. Then the point is, this question is, now, are you talking about Warren Buffett, the individual? Warren Buffett, the company? Warren Buffett, the industry? Which one are you talking about? Because he's got multiple entities that all have different tax positions and tax liabilities. You have to delve this out.
This is where logical fallacy enters in, because Warren Buffett is not Berkshire Hathaway.
No, he's not.
And he's Warren Buffett. Now, what is his personal taxes and what is his personal tax rate? I can guarantee you that Berkshire Hathaway is not, under any circumstances, an S-Corp. Those of you who don't have your own corporations may not know what that means. Having an S-Corp means that you are the shareholder and all the profits from the company and all the losses from the company go through your personal income tax return. Yep, I have one of these. Believe me, I wish I had a C-Corp. And if I'd been smart when I formed this stupid thing, I would have done it as a C-Corp, so the corporation would have to pay its own taxes. But I didn't. So every time I happen to make money, which is rarely, sadly.
We feel sorry for you.
Yes, I think I made $300 last year or something. The corporation. Now, don't kid yourself. I took a salary, and that's the whole point behind a corporation. I won't get into that because it'll take too much time. But Berkshire Hathaway is not an S-Corp. They file their own returns. And believe me, in a corporation that size, there are all kinds of things you can do to have your costs equal your income. So the corporation doesn't pay much taxes. We can't do that in this small of a corporation, but you can do it. Talk to anybody who's a CPA who works for a large corporation and you ask them what they do to make income very close to expenses. They will tell you right up front that you do what you can to make sure the corporate profits aren't too big. He's kidding us. He's trying to make us think that Warren Buffett is Berkshire Hathaway and vice versa, which isn't true. It's false. So we're actually comparing apples and oranges here.
Oh, absolutely.
Corporate rates, personal rates, secretary rates. Does he actually pay at a different rate than his secretary? I have a feeling his secretary is very highly paid. So they're both in what's the high rate now, 39%?
I believe close to that, yes.
I'm guessing that both Warren and his secretary are in the 39% bracket.
Yeah, but for him, that 39% is an awful lot bigger gross number than hers.
And Barry, that's the bottom line. The fact is that when you make $1 million and you pay 39% of it, you've paid $390,000. When you make $100,000 and you pay 39% of it, you paid $3,900.
Yeah, there's a big difference in that. So,
or I'm sorry, $39,000. Powers of 10. That's 10 times different, because You had 10 times bigger income. Why all of a sudden, why do we have to have tax rates that says a person that makes $1 million should actually only take home as much as the person that made $100,000? And what incentive is there for that man who made $1 million to continue the things that he did to make the $1 million? And the answer is there's no incentive for that to happen. None. And what does that do? Little by little by little, that kills investment. And little by little by little, that kills incentive. And you get people that come in and work 8 to 5 and say, no more. Because what's the point? The government's just going to come in and take it away. What does the government try to do? The government tries to sell it as, but you need to pay that to help the poor. Honestly, I know this has gotten a bad reputation for no conceivable reason. And that is, when people are allowed to keep larger portions of their $1 million, they reinvest it into businesses. They help the people who they invest in create the jobs that pay other people money. And therefore, you grow the number of people who are working. It's called trickle down. I hate that phrase because it got such a bad reputation in the 80s. But by golly, it worked. And yes, it works because it plays on a basic human need. And that is the idea that you can be successful and make more money. And once you make more money, then you spread it around because you have no choice. At this point, Barry, if my corporation made more money, I would hire people. But the fact is, because no one knows what this healthcare law is going to do, no one knows what the tax rates are going to do, nobody's going to take on employees right now that they think they're going to have to pay some kind of a gigantic fee if they hire them full time. It's not going to happen. So we're not going to see a jobs recovery until we get this mess all straightened around. And we're not going to get this mess all straightened around with the current occupant in the White House. And we're not going to get it straightened around with a number of the leaders on the other party either.
And we're not going to get it straightened around as long as anybody believes that the idea that not raising taxes is a form of government spending, like our current occupant does. So, ladies and gentlemen, you need to listen closely, parse through what these people, I almost said another word, but I'll refrain myself tonight, these people are saying, and stop and give it the common sense test. It's like, does that make any sense whatsoever? And the answer is, by and large, whether it's Republican or Democrat, I don't care if it's John Boehner or Barack Obama, the answer is usually no, it doesn't make any sense. First of all, we have to put it in light of Scripture, then we put it in light of our Constitution, and then we put it in light of our own personal experience. And we ought to know that if your boss comes and tells you, I'm not going to take out any higher taxes on you, but that means I'm spending more on you, that doesn't make any sense now, does it? Because government does not create wealth. You know, they do not produce money. All they do is spend it. And Barack Obama has admitted to you now, we've got a spending habit, and you've got to provide for it. And if we give you tax cuts, you're just forcing us to have to get it somewhere else. So we got to get our spending from you.
This is almost like having a child who has a drug addiction who steals from you.
Yes.
And then attempts to make you feel guilty. You made me into an addict, and now it's your job to make sure that I get my fix. Let's say I did participate in making you an addict. Now I'm going to give you the cure. And that is, I'm going to cut your supply so you have to go cold turkey. Sorry.
See, that's the big problem with an addict, though, Chuck. They don't want a cure. They want you to enable them to continue on in the lifestyle they become accustomed to.
Bingo. What has happened is this guy has gotten his head gigantic because he's been able to run up multi-trillion dollar budgets. And he really is saying, we still haven't spent enough. Of course, what this is going to do eventually, it has to, Barry, this has to ignite inflation. And the only reason it hasn't so far is because the economy was robust enough. It's sort of like an earthen dam that's starting to weaken, and you can see cracks and you can see water starting to come through it, but it really kind of, it just keeps holding on and nobody knows what's holding it up. Well, eventually what happens is that crashes and burns. The dam is going to collapse at some point and we're going to get massive inflation. We're already starting to see it. Prices are going up on things like groceries, gasoline. One thing I had to laugh about Michelle Bachmann was when she was campaigning, we're going to go back to $2 a gallon gasoline. I go, how are you going to do that? The price of crude is largely based on the value of the dollar because crude has an intrinsic value. You're going to have to deflate the currency, and you can't do that very fast, or what you create is a depression. So what are you going to do? What you have to do is stop printing money. And the only way to stop printing money is to stop spending money.
that's not a budget balancing measure that our current occupant wants to take.
Well, that's also not a way to win an election.
Talking about presuppositions, now we're getting down to it.
Yeah.
The key now, is, he's talking to...
We're out of time.
Oh, okay.
Barack Obama was smart to be talking to college students about taxes, spending more money.
Absolutely. Going to buy him votes.
Yes.
Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.